Hello, and welcome to episode 49 of Future Library. I'm your host, Alex Botton. How slick was that, listeners? Yeah. If you've been with me from the beginning, you've heard me go from bumbling introductions through to, you know, ones where I didn't even introduce who I was and didn't say who I was through the whole show, and now I'm getting quite slick at it. But have I lost some of the charm of the early shows? The answer is no. So, episode 49. I have guests with me. I realise by saying that I have gone back to the old slightly redundant introduction of saying I have guests, because it's redundant to say I've got guests when there wouldn't be a show if I didn't have guests, and I say that every time I do this. So anybody who's listened to the regular shows will know that I do that all the time as well, so that's redundant as well. So I'm now trapped into an Inception-like loop of redundancy that I now have to break my way out of. How do I do that? Well, I should probably introduce my guests. I'm speaking to Karthik and Craig of the band Flamingods. I'll give you a bit of background as to how I came across Flamingods. I got added by, I think it was Belly Kids or something like that on Twitter. Went to have a look at their website. Amongst the things they were selling, and some of the things they're selling are very exciting screen prints and T-shirts and various things of stylized pop idols and icons of popular culture. Amongst these was a tape by Flamingods, which was out of stock. So I went to the Flamingods Bandcamp page, listened to it, liked it, downloaded it. Once I'd liked that one, I went and then got everything else from their site, and then sent them a message saying, do you want to be on the podcast? And a few short weeks later, here they are. Hello, guys. How are you?
Hello.
I don't know. That's how you found us.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I'd like to give a bit of background, you see, because I like to let the listeners know how they too can live the dream. Because it's important to know. It's not some kind of magic that I find people by, listeners. I do exactly what everybody else does. I just click on links and go, oh, that's interesting. And, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I'll buy that. Oh, that's interesting. And then we have conversations like this. So, how the hell are you guys? Are you having a good day?
We are having a fabulous day so far.
Yeah. I've not been awake long, but
I've been awake. Thinking about Domino's.
You're thinking about Domino's, as in the game or pizzas?
Well, now that you mention it, the game, but prior to that, the pizzas.
So how do you feel about Domino's pizzas? Because I don't know if you've ever seen the Mark Thomas show about Domino's.
No.
You know, the activist comedian, Mark.
Thomas? This sounds like it might be something that would change.
I don't know. It's been kind of ruined for me. I used to live in another country where Domino's was just amazing, fucking good, and now it just doesn't compare here. It's a bit like greasy cardboard or something.
Yeah.
That's what I always liken it to. I still eat it.
Yeah, I'm more of a Pizza Hut guy, but Domino's, Domino's today, maybe.
They do deliver, though. That's good.
They do deliver, yeah. It's because they text me with deals. They're cheesy bastards.
Two Tuesdays stuff.
Is it a bit like kind of Orange Wednesdays with Orange phones?
Yeah. Maybe I've just got like a Domino's phone or something.
Yeah. This week's episode brought to you by Domino's and Orange phones. Mark Thomas, or Thompson, or whatever his name is, the comedian, got a job working for them, delivering, and every time he delivered, he pointed out that the American arm of the business funds pro-life anti-abortion causes. And people were refusing the pizzas at the door. So there you go. So some of your pizza money goes towards that. So depending on your ethics, you may want to buy more pizzas or fewer.
Wow.
There you go. So I keep the listeners get informed by lots of things there. It might not be the case. The business may have been sold or something. I don't know. Completely off topic here. Okay, so Flamingods. Tell me a bit about Flamingods.
So it initially started, as I'm sure you know, as Kamal's solo project, a bedroom project. I think probably going back about four years now. Quite a while. It was like a solo project for a bit, and then kind of just brought us all into the equation. I mean, four of those guys, Kamal, Craig, Charles, and Sam, grew up in Bahrain together, and then I met Kamal in London, and then through him met all of these guys, and then I guess, yeah, it kind of became what it is now when we all just started jamming.
Yeah, I was trying to write out our bio once, and I realized how much I kind of get confused by which order things actually happen, because there was so much back and forth at first. Like, I wasn't in Flamingods for, like, me, Craig. I wasn't in Flamingods for a few, like, maybe first couple of years, but I was still, like, playing around, making stuff with Kamal, and, like, actually on, like, the first album and stuff. But, yeah, stuff like that just confuses me when I try to figure out our inception, because I don't know when I officially, like, the band was made.
Yeah, I think we were, loosely speaking, we were all Fleming Gods, but we weren't as such Fleming Gods together as a band.
I think ATP Jam, that was, like, official, right?
Now, I've heard about that. Was this the famous playing in the chalet that went on for many, many hours?
Yeah, that 8-hour jam. That was, at ATP Festival, Animal Collective curated that. We had, I can't even remember, over 100 people in our six-bed chalet. And it didn't end too well with the security guards, but it was fun. Good story.
So what happened with the security guards? I'm intrigued, because I've read the various texts on it. So for listeners who are unaware, you guys went along to the All Tomorrow's Parties Festival with a load of instruments, started playing in your chalet. Lots of people then started, who were passing, started coming in, I understand. And then instruments got getting passed around, and the kind of a revolving cast of players during it. Then the story kind of finishes with security turning up not very happy. So what actually happened with security?
Well, they just made everybody leave the premises, and they wanted to know whose chalet it was. And everybody obviously bailed, bar like a few of us. And then Kamal, in the frame of mind that he was in, thought that it would be a good idea for him to leave the country. So he walks towards the tennis courts very slowly, and then realized that wasn't feasible and walked back. But I think what transpired from that was that they just basically said, don't do that again. And if you do, you'll be in big trouble. And everyone went to bed. But so not so much of a rock star ending, but it's a pretty good.
I was hoping that there was going to be an almost Ben-Hur-esque I'm Spartacus kind of thing, you know, where everybody would say, it's my chalet. No, it's my chalet. And they'd have 100 people all stood in front of them defiantly saying, it's my chalet.
That would have been amazing. You're with us. You're either with us or you're against us. You will join our jam.
Yeah. And one of the security guards turns to the other one and say, actually, it's my chalet. He takes his badge off and throws it at the feet of the other guy and says, take your badge back, the man. I'm joining the jam.
I wish that's how it happened.
Oh man, yeah.
You know what? That, because you know, people aren't going to remember what happened, just start saying that is what happened.
Yeah, man, I wish you were there to orchestrate that.
Citation needed. You can cite this podcast. So at that show, that was the one where famously 100 people said it was their chalet. So you can, what you can do now, you see, is you can when the Wikipedia page is written about it, you can cite that time stamp of the podcast as the citation of that happening.
Yeah.
And there you go.
It'll be done.
Yeah, absolutely. So you had this jam, loads of people in a chalet. I'm guessing it was quite cramped, because I don't imagine those chalets are particularly spacious.
They're not hugely spacious, no. The largest room is a room with two single beds, I think. Or maybe the room with a double bed, a room with two single beds. But yeah, not hugely spacious. So it was pretty cramped, but...
You see, the way I imagine them is... I don't know if you're aware of the British comedy Heidi High from years and years ago, which was set on a kind of...
I'm familiar with it.
It was set on a holiday camp. Okay. And the chalets were like single rooms with like a couple of beds and a sink. And they were like sheds with a little pitched roof. And that's how I kind of imagined them. So as we're speaking, I'm actually looking up what a current modern chalet looks like. Cause...
I mean, the ones in Butlins are like, they're like kind of blocks of flats. In Pontins, they are. The ones that we were, they are kind of like sheds with flat roofs, and they're all attached to each other.
Ah, I see. Yeah, I think I'm getting some images here that are kind of giving me an idea of what that was. So was it a Pontins one, you say?
That one was Butlins.
Oh, Butlins, okay. Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, they're a little bit nicer than they used to be. Yeah. If you Google Butlin's chalets, there's a black and white photograph at the top left that shows kind of what they used to be like. And there's some colour ones further down that show the kind of the old school ones. That's the ones I have in my head whenever I think of things like All Tomorrow's Parties.
Yeah, the one below, directly below the one at the top on the left. Yeah. That's basically it.
Right. Okay. So like long rows of.
Yeah. Stuff. There's a bit of flat on top of the roof, I think.
Okay. Got you. They're not the most attractive, are they? That's
right. They're not great. They're all right.
It's just looks like a good stomping ground for the purposes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it's nicer than staying in a tent.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm not a
camper. That looks like a picture you would take.
Yeah.
so you had this thing that happened. So that was the inception of Fleming Gods. And had the first tape already been made by that point, or was that something that came afterwards?
Maybe. The Quamar's bedroom project was already like in swing by then. Do you remember what year that jam was?
Oh, bloody hell. I think that was in 2011. 2011, maybe.
Yeah, I can't. And when was the original song? Wait, that's the
Maybe
same year the first
2010.
tape was released, but Waves and whatever came before that, it's kind of convoluted even to us in the band
Yeah,
somehow.
because I'm not sure if you've seen through like our stuff. We re-record all the lo-fi stuff, so there's like Sun and Away that were on tape, and they're all lo-fi like recordings done on the on laptops or on I don't know whatever methods we had or Kamal had at the time rather. And then we re-recorded them the studio to kind of recreate the stage performance. So Sun is kind of a re.
Yeah, we have two albums called Sun, pretty
Yeah,
much.
Sun is the lo-fi Sun is I would say quite different from the studio album Sun, but that's more representative of our live shows. So in a way, yeah, at the moment we're kind of playing catch up with that, but also making new stuff. We just make a ton of stuff all the time. Can't really stop.
I think that's the best way to do it, isn't it? I mean, you know, I'm a musician myself, and I just tend to record with only the vaguest of ideas of where it's going to be and what it's for.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good just for general like feeling inspired and feeling like you have a lot of places to go. And like when you feel like that, it's just like you're more excitable in your head about like, I don't know, just personally for me, I guess when we're like jamming, you can jam and bring out a lot of ideas and take it, not just try to organically like open up these jams, but try to really just throw an idea in there, and a lot of times it really works,
Yeah, you
sometimes
become
not
like
so much, but
less attached to the end result and more attached to the feel. Like on the on Sun, the studio album Sun, we have I think like six or seven, at least six or seven tracks that were just kind of like just happened in the studio. They just came out of jams. And actually one of those, Cacao, is probably my favorite track on the album, even though that was just completely unprecedented.
A lot of that, the debut studio album Sun is just kind of one of the things I think was only like jammed out once, and that's it. Oh wait, that's O Temple, isn't it? Yeah, that's not actually on the thing, but we had it as a B-side for a long time on Bandcamp, and that's like half of Sun is just made in the studio on the day and then recorded because we liked it.
So I think that's a good way to work, is to sit down and just start playing and see what happens. I think there's. I remember once Norman Blake from Teenage Fan Club once said, "Rehearsing is for those who need to." And that kind of stuck in my head because at the time he said that, I was playing in guitar bands, and I'd reached a point where the guitar band I was in gigged more than we rehearsed. We never ever rehearsed, and we gigged quite a lot. And we got to the point where we were writing and recording new stuff by me writing it, then them coming along to my house, us setting up the four track, me showing them how to play the songs. We would then record the first take. Then that would be the version they would then learn to play shows from. So, and we wouldn't even rehearse the songs. They'd just go away. And then next gig, we say, "Well, do we know how to play this now?" "Yeah, we know how it goes." "Okay, let's do it." So,
How did the shows go?
well, I think it was because we'd been playing together quite a long time at that point.
Okay,
And we
yeah.
got quite used to working that way because
Got
it
the
was,
chemistry and stuff as
yeah,
well.
it was just, you know, we could, I knew that the other two would do kind of the right thing at the right time. And it was like this guitar, bass, drums, vocals trio, so it's quite easy to react quite quickly to other people in that.
What were you guys called?
Yeah, it's back in my days when I played in bands that sounded like Dinosaur Jr. and the Lemonheads and stuff.
Nice,
And
nice.
now I sit in my office making electronica. So
Really?
I think that's what happens. I think that's what people either kind of stop playing altogether, or people who played in guitar bands end up playing in, you know, doing electronic stuff.
Yeah, quite a lot, I find. You have to send us a link to your to some stuff that you're making.
I will do. There's plenty of it. A couple of years ago, I did a thing called A Thing a Day, where I made either a new drawing, photograph, or piece of music every day for a year.
Oh, that's awesome.
And at the end of that, I'd got quite a lot of music because I find it quite quick and easy to do. So I'd kind of like chuck something together in a very short period of time, and then I had about five or six kind of full-length albums worth of stuff at the end. I think it was about 100 and something tracks I'd recorded by the end of the
That's
year.
very refreshing. That's something I might pinch that off you.
Do it, yeah, absolutely. I would recommend everybody to do it at least 1 year of just setting yourself the task of at least making something. If you're having a lazy day, it can just be a photograph. if you're feeling a bit more ambitious, a piece of music or a drawing, and then just upload it to a blog somewhere, then at the end of the year, you've got a whole shitload of work. And you can go, oh, I can take that, I can take that, I can take that for this and this and this. So, yeah, it's an interesting project to do.
Yeah.
Sounds like you've got to be a little bit organised to do it, though.
I think it's not really sort of being organised. I think it's just being able to do it even when you don't want to.
Yeah.
That's the main issue. I think the problem I would have would be some days I'd be just like, oh, I cannot be bothered with this. Why have I set myself this project? And then I would, still have to force myself to do it. And the further you get into the year, the more important it seems to finish it. I then tried the same thing the next year. I tried to do a drawing every day, and I got to 100 days, and I was just like, oh, fuck this. I just can't be bothered doing another drawing. But I did 100 drawings.
Yeah, you hit, like, a good number.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought it was something to be, I could feel all right about that. So. Yeah. But, do it. I recommend anybody listening and any musicians or whatever to feel free to do that. So what was the next thing that happened then? So you had the ATP thing, you had the tapes come out. So I think things seem to have kind of snowballed a bit from there if you go through your biography.
Yeah, I don't know really.
Actually only joined after ATP officially because I wasn't even there. I was like the one not there. And then so I came in.
Yeah, I guess
and,
once you started
we played gigs.
And
we made a way next. We made that tape and put that out. That was like same thing as Sun, like just recorded in bedrooms, but with all of us this time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then more gigs, then another album, and then since then more gigs, and now another album.
Yeah, I think just loads of gigging. But obviously, like now that as you know, Kamal and Charles and Kamal's girlfriend Beth are living out in Dubai, we've only been gigging when they come back. So we kind of just organise tours. Well, but prior to that, we were just like gigging like crazy. I think for a year at least solidly.
Yeah, when Kamal first went back, like, we did some gigs with Adam, and now that Charles went there, him and Charles have done some like duo gigs. I actually really want to see.
Yeah, they've done some shows in Bahrain and Dubai.
I saw a clip of it, and it does sound pretty cool.
Yeah.
So have you reached that point where you could have two versions of Flamingods playing simultaneously in different parts of the world?
Yeah, kind of, really weirdly.
We've talked a lot about like doing Skype gigs.
Well, it's interesting because I know that it sort of ties into something I was going to mention in a moment. One of the other acts that seems to tie a lot of the people I've spoken to together is Lucky Dragons, that people have either played with them or know them. I mean, I've known Luke since about 2004, and I first put him on when I was living in Scotland. I put on some Lucky Dragons shows just after, I think it was just shortly after Dark Falcon had been out for a little bit, and it was well before, suddenly the big burst of productivity that they had. And I know that Luke and Sarah can sometimes find themselves doing shows where he'll be in LA and she's in New York for an art thing, and she will do a Lucky Dragon show on her own, and he'll be doing a Lucky Dragon show on his own. And they've got this idea that they can now do Lucky Dragon shows simultaneously in different parts of the country, and it's still as much Lucky Dragons. So it's
That's funny, actually. I was talking to someone else about that quite recently, about how, like, what the feeling was towards quite a lot of electronic artists are doing that, splitting up. I mean, some more often to capitalize on, obviously, getting more money. Obviously, in Lucky Dragon's case, it's not that. I think it's interesting to look at it from both perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, it's because it's very, very difficult to make money out of recorded music. I think now that bands are embracing Bandcamp a little bit more, I think it's starting to be. It's starting to come back into the control of the artist, which is really great. But I think certainly from the point of view of, the old style record labels where you'd, at least be getting basic minimum wage to just sit around all day doing nothing if you wanted to. Those are long gone. So kind of the days of indie bands being able to get signed and just hang out and make their next masterpiece doesn't seem to happen anymore, and they have to scrape the money together. And I mean, there was that interesting article, and I think I've mentioned it on the show before for any listeners that are familiar. There's the one about the guys from Grizzly Bear who barely, they're very successful, but they make less money than people kind of doing very kind of entry level jobs in call centers and things like that.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. It is crazy.
Those guys are pretty good as
they're
well.
They're massive,
yeah. Like, yeah, that's it. And they had a top 10 album at the time. And three of them didn't have a permanent residence. And I don't think any of them had healthcare. So, yeah, I mean, so you read these things and you can think, well, these bands, they must be, you know, doing all right. You know, they're in the charts, they're appearing on Jimmy Kimmel and things like that.
Yeah.
They must be successful. They must be making enough money. And you can sit there thinking, oh, man, I bet they've got more money. I bet they've got a nice house and they've got a car and stuff. And then you realise that they're actually living on a sofa in somebody else's apartment.
That's madness,
hoping they don't get ill. So... Yeah, I think things in the UK are slightly better because obviously, you know, we don't have to worry so much about the healthcare side of things.
Yeah.
And I think benefits are less frowned upon in the UK than the whole idea of being on benefits in the US is. But certainly, I think I think that kind of dream of making it is gone a little bit. And I think now artists have to look at it from the point of view of success is being able to continue doing what you want to do.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's like that the state of things is both fortunate and unfortunate because the creative industry is both like art, design and music. They're just so saturated that I think by default it pushes the bar higher. So everybody, I mean, it's so easy to get your music out there now that to get noticed you have to be good. And there's so much good stuff out there. There's really, really so much good stuff. In the UK, particularly, I think in the UK, there's so much good music and design and art at the moment, which is great. It's just sad to see that it's just fucking impossible for people to make it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's. I mean, I remember years and years ago reading an article. I remember Melody Maker ran an article, a series of articles about how to make it as a band or how to, you know, get to a certain level. And they kind of started out by saying, you know, you may think that there's loads and loads of bands out there, but at any one time in the UK, there's no more than something like 5,000. And of those, almost all of them are function bands. So the actual competition is much lower than you think. And it seemed like, oh, well, you know, we can make it. So, I remember back then sending out tapes to record labels and you'd get phone calls from A&R people and stuff like that. And it was, you know, and getting small labels to release stuff wasn't particularly hard. But now, you know, I think bands now have got it both better and worse than bands maybe 20 years ago had.
Yeah.
So, you know, while the options are there, to just sell directly to your audience, and that's great. Finding your audience is now quite difficult.
Yeah, and plus those options are there for everyone.
Yes,
every band.
And that is the problem that anybody who has bought a loop station can sit down and now just whack something out, stick it up on Bandcamp, and go, yeah, you know, make a band name that has a couple of triangles in it as part of the spelling, and away they go. Luckily, not as prevalent in the UK as it is in the US, but, you know, but I'm not downer. We should probably try and cheer things up a bit. Now we're all kind of feeling quite depressed about that. But the plus side is, as you guys have probably found out with Bandcamp, you're probably making more money from just directly from Bandcamp sales than you would have done if you were in the old way of doing things where the label would give you a percentage of the pressing as payment. And then, you know, if you're anything like me, you'd have then felt guilty about selling those to anybody. You'd just given them to all your friends and would have made no money from it. So,
yeah, well, that is basically what's happened.
So because I know you've got the new album coming out. Is it on
Shape Records?
And is that going to be on vinyl?
Yeah, that's going to be a vinyl. That's coming out on the 21st or the 28th of July.
See, I'm looking forward to that.
Don't ask me.
I don't know. That's it. I'm going to just go with the 21st. Yeah, it should be good. That, funnily enough, talking about internet, we were discussing the internet. Yeah. We were discussing the internet. Yeah, that was recorded, across the internet, sending tracks back and forth to each other. None of us were ever in the same room recording that.
So I think would that be an interesting experience then for doing it? Because, I mean, obviously, from what I understand of the way you work, it's very much kind of based on playing together. So has that been a different experience for you?
Well, I guess that is, like, one way we'd like to do it. But, I mean, a word I always use when trying to explain what we do is, like, we're explorative and we try to explore different, like, you know, so we take a lot of influences obviously from, like, different cultures or whatever, but we also try to do that with our approach to, you know, making the music. So, like, a lot of the times off the album, say Kamal would just make a loop of something and then I'd just take that loop, put it into, like, my door and then just play around with it, really, and that was its own kind of fun, and you just see where you can take that. And so you're riffing on someone else's idea, but you're like, I don't know, just improvising, see what you can do. And that's just another way to do things, I guess, and then give that back to someone, and maybe they'll come up with a vocal idea to put on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we don't actually have to be in the same room for the vibe to work, really.
That's good.
Some songs, you know, do just fall by the wayside. There are a lot of ideas, probably like 100 different ideas that didn't really go touched, mm-hmm. you know?
I mean, I suppose the good thing about recording software nowadays is that you can, once you've got all the individual parts recorded in different places, it's very easy then to pull them into a cohesive whole and to make them sound less kind of recorded in different places, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. This sounds better. This is actually, funnily enough, even though this was meant to be a lo-fi album, sounds better produced, better recorded than Sun.
Yeah.
With no disrespect to Soundsave, it's just I don't know how it's come together. It sounds more studio, more produced than Sun.
Well, this is the thing with it's reached the point now where home recording stuff is now more powerful than professional recording stuff was 15 years ago. So, you know, we've got the same tools at home in our laptops, and you know, you're sitting with your laptop. It's the thing that you communicate to the world with. You pretty much do almost anything you do with anything in the modern world, you do it through your laptop. It's also the instrument that you use. It's your way of recording your work. You can duplicate your work with it using the CD drive or just sending it off to Bandcamp. It becomes like the hub of everything, and a decent mic, a decent recording setup, and you're away.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, man. I don't think anyone had a decent mic. I think we all just used the microphones on our laptops.
Yeah.
Shit, and like, in a way, I actually think that's not so bad for this album, because everything that's there, like, you know, everything that's recorded kind of was affected by that mic.
Mm.
But I still like the album and all, so I guess the mic did good.
Yeah,
to
both.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that is the other thing, the built-in mics on laptops as well have improved significantly. So, you know, it's everything is going, what I'm trying to say,
They do cause problems, though.
What's that?
Sometimes they do cause problems, though. They can be hard to get a good recording, and it's hard to get everything in a nice mix after that, after the fact.
The problem I find with mine is, because I never use the built-in mic on my MacBook to record podcasts. I always use my external mic. But because the built-in mic, if I'm doing something and I'm running maybe a second monitor, then the fan starts up. And the second the fan, I don't know why Apple thought this was a good idea to put the mic right next to the fan vents. Because then it sounds like you're recording in a hurricane.
Good.
And unless you're going for that vibe, it's...
Yeah.
Which could be interesting.
True.
It could be. So the new album then, so it's coming out in July.
Yeah.
On vinyl as well, you say?
Yeah, on Through Shape Records here in the UK, and Crash Cymbals are going to do some distribution in the States as well.
Fantastic. Is this the first time you've been on vinyl?
Second,
excellent. So was Sun on vinyl as well originally?
Yeah. Artists had released that for us.
Fantastic. So I'm kind of curious, because I mean you kind of mentioned it very much in passing about the way that the because when we're talking about, you know, the percentage of the pressing being the payment and stuff, and you said, oh well, that's what's happened here. So I guess that the labels will give you a certain amount of the records as payment. It used to be about 10% back in my day. Is it a sort of similar thing? I mean, obviously you don't have to give away anything about any ways of working if you don't want to.
I don't know. I think, I mean, we're still quite new to the business side of things. Artists Hard, I think, actually gave us quite a generous portion of the records. I understand they gave us half.
That's really good.
Yeah. I don't know about what, I mean, I don't know what's happening with this one, but I'm not sure whether we just get a percentage and maybe, a small amount of vinyls.
Because with Artists it's Hard, we did, like, put a lot of money into that one ourselves to make the album and master it. Like, we pretty much brought a finished product to them.
They got
it manufactured, so that's where like their side kind of comes in more. And it's kind of similar with this actually, but I'm not sure what the actual.
And with the Bandcamp sales, does that money goes directly to the band?
Yeah, into a bank account.
Yeah, you see, that's what you need, isn't it? See, this is the thing. This is what I'm trying to kind of try to get at with that from the point of view for any bands who are listening. It's whilst the being on the records is fantastic, and I really still like getting vinyl back with my name on it. You know, when you first get that first ever record that you've made, and you look at it, you take it out the first sleeve, and you look at it, and for me, the moment is when you look at the actual record itself and look at the label, and you see your band's name on the label on both sides. You're like, oh yeah.
Yeah,
with my name on it. Yeah,
yeah,
that's good. It's satisfying.
Yeah, that's a really nice feeling, and that's still, you know, I mean, I've been playing in bands now for like 25 years, which I always feel like I'm turning into an old fart, but you know, I can't do anything about time passing, can I? So I'm just going to live with it. The thing is that I made less money from having copies of records to sell than I have from just selling stuff on Bandcamp. And I think that part of it, I think, is partly not having to post things out, which saves you a bit of money.
Yeah.
You know, and also that obviously people go to the label first if they're wanting to buy the record, or they'll buy it from an online distributor or something like that if they haven't heard of you. So I think, I don't know quite where I'm going with that. Bandcamp, good. Record label's also good, but Bandcamp more profitable, possibly.
Do you know what
Bandcamp's just nice, man. It's nice, even like if you're just a fan.
Yeah.
It's just good. I don't know.
I wonder if artists make more money out of the, you know, when you can just do any, like, recommended donation, you can either give, like, £0 or you can give £10. Or do you reckon those make more money than artists who actually charge, and people are more inclined to just rip them from somewhere because they have to pay, or people being like, oh, fuck it, I'll just give, like, a couple of quid?
I think there's a certain point where it works, because I tend to put all my stuff up for free with a donate what you want.
Yeah.
And I don't make a fortune from it, but I have a kind of steady dribble of money coming in from it. But other people I know who are kind of at the same level tend to put things at about £4 or £5, and then, you know, I think if it's a balancing act. It's working out whether the amount is too high or too low, if you see what I mean. I mean, is it better to put something at £1, where at least you get £1 from it each time? Or £3, so, you know, you're getting three times as much, and it's still not too much.
Yeah.
If you can sell something to somebody for the price of a Mars bar, they're going to think that's a good deal, and they're still going to walk away. You're still going to walk away with some money. It's like, I'll go on Bandcamp, and usually what happens is if I've got some spare money in PayPal, I'll go on Bandcamp and have a look round. The thing that's working quite well at the moment is that the pound is starting to recover against things like the Canadian dollar and the US dollar. So buying stuff from overseas is starting to get cheaper again.
Yeah.
So going on to Bandcamp and going through... What's that?
I said for us.
Yeah, well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's kind of crap for other people. But, you know, again, we can't help that either. So, you know, we just have to live with it. But, yeah, I think it is a case of trying to work out what's the best price. I know that Bandcamp say £7 seems to be the good kind of point, but I don't know. I don't know. It's a difficult one.
It's like... That first time you put something up, I guess you have a choice to be like, am I going to be one of those prolific singer-songwriter types that puts up loads for free, and I've just got this mystery around me, like, oh, you just make so much music and puts it up for free, or are you actually going to try and make some money?
Mm-hmm. It works differently for people, though, I think. Like, do you know that producer Taku? He's massive now, and he was just putting out, like, I think a couple of years ago, putting out just so much shit for free every single day. And he did that 50 Days of Dilla thing as well, and after that, he just got massive, just all free, loads of free music, and now he's just like, high flyer.
I heard about that 50 Days of Dilla thing, actually, as well. I like the sound of it.
Yeah.
You see, but then again, it's kind of... There may be somebody who's equally good who's tried the same thing and just hasn't been noticed.
It's
so difficult to work out what the kind of the magic formula is. But ultimately,
I think it's the formula.
I think as long as you, it comes back to as long as you're doing what you think is good and you're able to continue doing that, then I think that's success.
Yeah, definitely. If you're really enjoying whatever you do, the kind of the success of it won't be based on whether like you're making loads of money out of it, because you're still just doing what you love. If you're making a piece of art like you did a day, it doesn't matter, because you're just you're continuing an ongoing project, and you're keeping yourself happy, really, and creative.
Yeah, we all do try, like, for the ways that we actually make money with our jobs. Like, we're trying to also do other jobs that interest us.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to do, like, music stuff. Karthik does design stuff, which is, like, another thing he's into and he's pretty good at. Sam cooks. You know, he's a chef. He likes to cook.
Yeah.
Kamal runs, like, a magazine shop where he kind of gets to decide how things go about that, I think.
Yeah, curate all the magazines.
Yeah,
really,
I think,
crazy,
yeah,
stuff.
Curating magazines sounds like something he'd be into.
Yeah, some really crazy magazines.
I don't actually know what Charles does, but pretty much...
Yeah, Charles's job is a secret from all of us.
Yeah, as long as you enjoy what you do aside from making music, you know?
I hear on the grapevine that Charles's job is to be in charge.
Well, yeah, well, I guess.
Apparently of our days and our lives. I don't know how you get that kind of job, but apparently, there you go.
He's just in charge. We should just put him in charge.
He would be the kind of person that would, would run
kind of that tune.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, so absolutely, it's difficult. I think you've hit the nail on the head with the kind of day job side of things. I think if you can get a day job that is sympathetic to you going off and doing the music side of things, and isn't going to destroy your soul with every second you're there, that's fine.
I think,
you know, we're not going to be sitting around gold plated swimming pools.
Wait, what? You don't have a gold-plated swimming pool?
No.
Oh, man. That's this guy. I think we're going to have to leave now.
Yeah. Is that because are you currently in rubber rings on your gold-plated swimming pool? Waterproof laptops floating at the side.
Yeah, gold-plated waterproof laptops. Gold-plated everything.
We just got a piece of wood floating and put the laptop on that.
Yeah, when we said the Bandcamp sales were good, we meant they were good. They were
You'll be rich.
Do you think gold would get fucked up by the chlorine?
Does gold? Chlorine.
By the chlorine. I don't know, actually.
We just won't use chlorine. We'll just empty it and refill it.
I think we fill it with like something really rare, like puppy tears.
Super sterile puppy tears. And yeah, so sterile that when it's still, you can't even tell there's water in it.
Yeah.
Unless there's a ripple, you can't see anything there at all. That'd be amazing.
That's the dream.
So what the dream is, gold-plated pool, and to avoid it getting damaged by the chlorine, you have it filled with super sterile puppy tears.
Yeah. And keep the puppies, of course, keep the puppies.
Well, you have to have a fresh supply of the tears. I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
I mean, where else are you going to get puppy tears from but puppies? You can't artificially manufacture them.
I mean, I dealers, though. There's people that sort you out with that kind of stuff. I don't know.
There's backstreet dealers. You don't want to go to those guys.
It's a black market trade.
Oh, yeah,
trade,
sure, yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, you know what they cut that stuff with.
So what's next, then? You've got the album.
Summer Tour.
Oh, yeah. So what's happening with the Summer Tour?
So European tour in July, UK tour in August, sort of mini Euro tour in July.
Mini, no, I was trying to grow it still and nurturing this tour. We got a few dates about the place, like a couple in Italy, some Portugal, Amsterdam, Rotterdam, and we're just...
Spain.
Still working on it. Spain. Adding more.
Hopefully Berlin, yeah.
And any shows in the UK?
Yeah, loads. I think we're on, like, I'm just going to take a stab in the dark and say around 15 now, actually. 12 to 15. I think at least 12.
Cool.
So, yeah, a whole load of shows in the UK. Pretty much one show in each city, not in every city, but a show per city, with two in London, one at Baba Yaga's Festival and one for Baba Yaga's Hut at the Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
So London people come to that.
Yeah, we'll be at Brighton as well, one of my favourite towns, and other places.
Yeah.
The question is, though, are you coming anywhere near Birmingham or Wolverhampton?
Are we?
Actually, a friend of mine asked if I wanted him to try and sort out a gig in Birmingham. I think that would be good.
Yeah, Birmingham
I'd quite
good.
Like to. People are fun there.
We'll get on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let me know, because that's where I live, just near Birmingham. I live just outside Wolverhampton. So... Awesome. Wolverhampton's got a big student population. That's worth thinking about.
Okay, yeah.
And if you played in Wolverhampton, you can always come and stay at our big house.
Nice.
No way.
So, yeah. We always open this up to people. We always say, me and my wife always say, look, if anybody wants to come and stay here when you're playing in Wolverhampton, feel free. Hit us up and we'll put you up.
Yeah, we could help you install the fireman's pole as well.
Yeah
man.
Swimming pool.
It'd be a
double bonus.
I'm pretty down for this, actually. Let's do it. Let's play in Wolverhampton.
Yeah, I don't know who you'd contact playing Wolverhampton, but
we'll find someone.
Yeah,
we'll do a gig swap or something. Find a band.
Yeah,
please.
There are places. There are places that are good. There's a good place called the Quadrant, I think.
Okay.
Or the Quad, or something like that. Or the Cube. It's got nothing to do with four sides, anyway. I think it might be the Quadrant.
Or
the
Quadrant Lounge.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, it's quite a nice place.
The nice thing about doing this on computers.
Absolutely, yeah.
Very close to the University of Wolverhampton.
Yeah, absolutely. There used to be a place called the Varsity that was fantastic, and now it's turned into a student accommodation office type place, which is a real shame because it was like the big major kind of mid-sized venue for Wolverhampton, and it got closed. So now you've got the Slade Rooms and obviously Wolverhampton Civic Hall. It's quite good. See, I was living in Birmingham for a really long time, and then moved out here because we decided to buy a house, and this just happened to be where my wife and I ended up. And there's actually more happening in Wolverhampton in terms of big gigs than happening in Birmingham.
Really?
A lot of bands will play the Wolverhampton Civic Hall rather than play anywhere in Birmingham.
That's so funny. That Wolverhampton's not really the kind of place that I would think about, maybe just because, I don't know.
No, I think it's because it's a fairly kind of middling-sized city, but it has a big student population because it's also got the Wolverhampton School of Art is here as well. So you've got a lot of artists and a lot of students. Again, it suffers from the same thing as the rest of kind of the West Midlands seems to suffer from, that there's a certain amount of kind of apathy towards live music. But I think it's slightly less bad than Birmingham because it's easier to get to things because they've got the tram and better, slightly better public transport than Birmingham.
Okay.
Because Birmingham's got a problem that the buses stop at about 11.
Okay.
And the train stops shortly afterwards, so it can be
got a big thing for public transport.
Yeah.
Handy.
Yeah, we have trams here, which is really great. I get to take the tram to work every day now, so
trams.
That's quite nice. It's nicer than being on a train.
Yeah, nicer being overground than underground as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, see, that's one of the things. I'm not a big fan of London because I can't stand the underground, and I find the whole thing far too kind of crowded and everybody rushing everywhere, and I kind of don't feel that in myself has been what I want to be involved in. So
yeah.
I try and avoid going to the point where I had tickets to go and see Stuart Lee in London, and on the day of the show didn't go because I just didn't want to go to London.
Really?
Yeah. And I really wanted to see Stuart Lee, but I just was that morning I woke up and thought, I hate London, I don't want to go to London.
It is kind of a ball ache, man. What you said, like, just trying to walk around the subway sometimes, I'm trying to, like, get across the corridor, but there's 100 people trying to go the opposite, like...
Opposite way,
or, like, what's the word? Going at a 90-degree angle to me, and I'm just, it's impossible.
Yeah, it's just cycle. You can't just be able to cycle, I think.
Yeah, buy a bike. It costs so much less as well, a bike.
Yeah.
It's so expensive here.
Just living close enough to cycle everywhere.
It kills me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort something out. So what we'll do is we'll draw things to a close. So where would people go if they want to find out more about Flamingods online?
Our new website, flamingods.com.
Oh.
Flamingods.
Yeah, done by our
.com.
Our expert designer friend Vinny has just made our website, and it's looking excellent. Actually, we'll send you a link to it.
I think flamingods.com is fairly easy to remember.
We made it as simple as possible.
You've sent a link to my head by saying it.
That's what I meant, as in I'll send a link to you.
Yeah.
Just going to say it
again.
He's
already done it.
Three words. There we go. Fantastic. And I will post that into the podcast comment, into the information that comes with the podcast for the listeners. So, when you download it, I tried actually to put it in the information about the file as well. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, where will I find this information? If you're unable to spell the word flamingods and .com, then if you look in the tags for the file, it might be in there as well. So it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you guys.
Thank you, and you.
Before we wrap things up, is there anything that I've not touched on that you really wanted to say?
I actually need a bit of help. I've got a guitar pick stuck in my MacBook Pro CD, the CD drive, and it's been there for about like 5 months. I don't know where to start. How do I get it out?
How far in is it?
It's just, can you hear it rattling around?
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. So it's right inside.
Yeah, it's in there.
Part of this computer there.
And is it the aluminium body one?
Yes.
Yeah, you're fucked. No, you might be able to get it out with a very thin blade.
I tried to get it out with tweezers when it was stuck in the edge and just went in. That's it.
Oh, no. Do you need your CD drive?
Yeah, I kind of do, actually. I have done it more recently, but maybe take it to the Mac store. I don't know. I thought you
maybe.
Might.
Maybe. Apple might be able to get it out for you. The other thing is it might be worth just going down to Maplin's and buying an external drive.
Yeah, that's true also.
They're like £20 now, so...
Dude, I should do that because my Mac's... I think they have a thing against CDs, like the actual company Apple, like, because they phase them out with the newest ones, but also my computer has the working disk drive, it doesn't read any disk I put in just for the sake of it. I don't know why.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking...
It's a USB, motherfucker. It's like, okay, shit.
Since I've stopped burning CDs, I kind of made a conscious decision not to make any more physical releases, and I was just going to go completely digital with everything. So since I've stopped burning stuff, I rarely put stuff into my computer. I think the only times I'll do it is when I'm going to maybe rip a DVD. And even then, if I can find a version of it online, I'll do that rather than rip it. So... Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, sorry, I don't have a magic solution to that. Stick with a very small amount of something sticky on it, maybe.
Maybe just get a Hoover. I don't know.
You should try and get a little string with a hook.
Yeah,
some glue.
What you could try is maybe a very thin piece of plastic, not like another pick, because that's just going to double your problem.
get a pick in there to coax out the old pick.
Yeah, and then a couple more picks. Just keep putting picks in there until it just starts spewing them out. Try getting, the plastic that ice cream tubs are made out of. Very thin stuff that the lids are made out of, not the actual tub itself. Get one of those, a strip of it that's kind of long that you can manoeuvre. Get some double-sided tape. And put that on one end and see if you can gently tap the pick nearer to the entrance and then tweeze it out.
That's a really good idea.
It's worth a shot, isn't it?
Yeah. I might give that a go, actually.
So there you go. This week's show brought to you by, Domino's Orange, major sponsorship by Bandcamp, and including top tips on how to remove picks from your computer. If it doesn't work, though, listeners, I assume no responsibility. but yeah, it might work. It's I think what you're trying to do is get in there with something that will not kind of damage what's in it.
Yeah.
So you want to do something that's very kind of as non-invasive as possible whilst being completely invasive.
Yeah.
See, that's why putting another pick would work, because apparently that doesn't damage anything. It just gets lost in there.
Yeah.
Eventually you have to. You have to stop putting picks into your computer.
I don't know how it happened.
And on that bombshell, we shall draw the show to a close. Listeners, go and listen to Fleming Gods. They're great. We've not even described what the music's like. You can listen to it all for nothing on Bandcamp, so just go and do that. Because I'm assuming if you're listening to it on a podcast, you have some degree of computer savviness, listeners, so you'll know what to do. So, that'll be fine. Karthik, Craig, thank you very much for speaking to me.
Thank you very much.
I'll send you a link to my stuff, and you can either sit around for the rest of the afternoon going, holy shit, that's terrible, or wow, why is this guy not really famous? The choice is yours. Or any point in between those two points, I'll be happy with you doing. It doesn't bother me. So, and hopefully you'll get a show up this end of the woods, and I'll actually get to come and see you play.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Hook it up.
Yeah. Sure. So, all that's left to say now is the traditional Future Library goodbye. Goodbye!
Goodbye!
Thank you for downloading this episode of Future Library. Future Library is brought to you by PetPiranha.com and is hosted by myself, Alex Botton. The podcast is free, but if you do want to show your appreciation, feel free to go along to alexbotton.co.uk and click through to music, where you'll be able to find things that you can buy, or go to asmallglassghost.co.uk where you can buy my latest music. Episodes come out when I feel like it, mostly weekly. But that's it, so thank you for listening.